This is Brock and Salk
from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
Brock and Salk here, final hour. Brought to you by our friends at Tackle, T-A-K-L. Doing all the work for Salk. You're probably doing some work on his place today as he's in jury duty, paying off his civic responsibilities. He was really looking forward to that. Can't wait to hear all of that goes. In his place is Greg Bishop, and what a great story he has on the Seattle Mariners. I found it captivating, and as close as we have been to this team, that we can all still learn a little bit from him. That article, as Greg just told me, has got to be fine-tuned today. Got a little bit of work to do to put your final paragraphs together, get that sucker sent out, and we'll all see it in Sports Illustrated next week. But this is a segment that we've always enjoyed doing over the years. You have got, again, a handful of some awesome NFL stories that they relate today. We'll get to T.O. in one of those. Kyle, can we spin around the NFL? Yes, we can. Story number one of spinning around the – can I get a little music? A little.
Yeah, I didn't – that's my mistake. Oh, that's okay. I didn't know you wanted music. I thought we were just going to kind of –
No problem. No, I know. This is what happens again. When the backup comes in, the backup quarterback comes in, there's always snap
Ricky,
count.
I'm going in.
Yeah, you can go back to level up if you need to.
Yeah, you can put level up in there if you want that as a little background. Okay. I think you could talk with us in the background. There we go. Spin around the NFL. You sent this note to us last night. You're going to make some enemies saying this, you know, in this market. Sean McVay is the best coach going in the NFL.
Yeah, I think I should clarify that. Like,
yeah, please do.
Well, I think it's hard to say he's the best coach now. While
not won a playoff game.
While Bill Belichick still exists.
Not won a playoff game.
Yeah, I think he will be the best coach in the NFL next. And I think it's because he has this sort of rare ability where he's personable, he works really hard, and he also schematically is, you know, I think pretty brilliant. I think that what you saw in terms of their team at this time last year, we were talking about Goff had never won a game. Todd Gurley was not going to be the player that they had drafted him to be.
Yeah.
Aaron Donald was going to be a major problem. And now we look at them and they have Brandon Cooks and Ndamukong Suh and Marcus Peters and Aqib Talib. And now we have a team that we're talking about that's a Super Bowl contender. And I think that starts with Sean McVay. And I think that the fact that he's so young really doesn't matter that much in the whole grand scheme of that.
You know, you're asking me about interviews during the break and different people that we talked to. One of the great interviews we've ever done on this show was Marvin Demoff. It was 2 years ago. It was out at 710 Day at Druids. At one point, Salk took his headsets off and looked at me and said, "Fix this. You need to fix this." Because Marvin, like a lot of agents that you talk to, can talk a lot. And he's an attorney, too. So he was talking. We're talking about Russell's contract, and he was going deep. So headset off. You're going to fix this. Well, through Marvin Demoff, I got to know his son, Kevin Demoff, very well. He's about my age, stayed with Kevin a couple different times, really smart guy. He's the president there. I ran into Kevin, I think, last year, and I asked him about hiring Sean McVay. He says, "Brock, we brought 10 guys in. Half hour in, we knew it." Oh, a very good, strong list of candidates. A lot of guys have done a lot of things in the NFL. Within a half hour, we knew Sean McVay was going to be our guy. He was that overwhelming to them with their talent. Did you get a chance to sit with him? Is there going to be a story coming out with McVay?
Yeah, I need to write it, actually, so thank you for the reminder. But I spent 4 days with McVay a couple months ago. It was, I think, in May. And what really struck me was, like, I think we had this idea of him that he's, like, the young millennial bro coach. And then he's, like, texting these guys. He's got the spiky hair. You know, he works out all the time. And what I found was the complete opposite.
Really?
Every day that I was with McVay, he allowed me to follow him around. And every one of those days started in the gym at 5 a.m. Yeah, they often, from there, went to like where he would spend 2 hours going over his practice script for a May mini camp practice in which there was no contact at all. And, you know, he sent me a picture via text when he was in Barcelona on vacation, and I could see that he was reading a book on coaching. And he was like, "Hey, we're having dinner at this place you recommended." And I was like, "Dude, are you seriously bringing a coaching book to dinner with your girlfriend?"
Yeah, he's all in. He kind of reminds me of Gruden before Gruden became Chucky. The Gruden that coached in Oakland early on that Al Davis was so overwhelmed by. Al Davis, one of the toughest interviews, by the way. When you hear coaches talk about going to interview for that job or a position under Al Davis, tough in that he knew everything inside and out. And John Gruden so overwhelmed Al Davis at that age and then was so overwhelming in his success and in taking that team to the Super Bowl, ultimately not winning and winning it with the Buccaneers. McVay kind of reminds me of a Gruden before Gruden became such a caricature.
You know, it's interesting you mention that because people that are around Sean that were also around John Gruden, they actually see some of him in Sean McVay, you know, whether it's the mannerisms, the diction and you know, that he uses to talk. I think it definitely, you know, Gruden was the first guy that kind of hired him and put him into the NFL, and I think some of that rubbed off. So we'll see if he has the early success that Gruden had, you know, when he came into the league and became a really young head coach.
Well, he did last year. He totally spun that team around, and they continue to move the story forward down in L.A. Because yesterday they make some breaking news. And I'm just expecting at any moment to see, unfortunately, the Seahawk wrecker, Aaron Donald, signed to a long-term extension. They're all-pro defensive tackle who held out last year, won his new deal, won his money. He didn't get his deal, and instead it's Brandon Cooks. And Brandon Cooks signs an enormous deal yesterday, becomes official, a five-year deal, $80 million. What all those numbers really look like, somewhere guarantees of $30 to $50 million. But it's an enormous expenditure for an L.A. Rams team that still has to pay Aaron Donald, still has to pay Todd Gurley, still has to pay Jared Goff. And it's why the professor this morning said, hey, Seahawks fans, this signing should remind you of maybe a move the Seahawks made a few years back.
To me, this reminds me of the Percy Harvin situation. Now, Brandon Cooks is not going to body slam anybody before a Super Bowl game or get into a fight. That's not his nature. But if you're going to be Aaron Donald, if you're going to be Todd Gurley, if you're going to be some of the other players, remember, they have three starters on the offensive line whose contracts are up. And so they have more big deals to do than any other team. You know, this could, you know, cause a little bit of friction, particularly if they don't get the Donald deal done.
To me, that's always a dangerous game, Greg, when you pay someone from outside. Not someone that's got the pelts inside. Not someone that helped turn around your whole organization last year. Not one of those, but actually this guy that's now going on his third franchise from New Orleans to New England, which is also a little bit of a red flag for me always. Like, hey, as special as he was, these two places said, and go do it elsewhere. Go sign your mega deal elsewhere. But you also had a chance and have had a chance to meet Brandon Cooks along the way.
Yeah, you know, I did a lot of reporting on Brandon before the Super Bowl last year. We would have written about him had the Patriots won the game and had he not been injured early on into it. And, you know, the people at Oregon State that knew him, they loved him. You know, they were talking about, here's a guy that showed up at school 6 months before he had to because he wanted to learn the offense. And the biggest thing he said to the wide receiver coach, who's now at San Jose State, was, you know, I'm going to be in every morning before you start work so that you can teach me how to do this stuff. I think that I'd be more concerned about, look at who Brandon Cooks has played with so far. Drew Brees and Tom Brady, two of the best quarterbacks in the history of the NFL. Can you expect him to have the same type of production when he's playing with Jared Goff? You know, now that defenses have tape on Jared Goff and we see how they approach him differently than they may have, especially early last season.
Help me read the tea leaves as we'll spin around the NFL to the next story and we'll bring it home here to Seattle. And the most relevant story going in Seattle, help me read the tea leaves, knowing what you know about Pete, about this team, what you know about Earl Thomas, of how this situation may or may not resolve itself over the next 8 days.
First off, I love Earl Thomas. I profiled him a couple years ago, and the story was built around stuff Earl Thomas says. It was just like amazing, crazy quote after amazing, crazy quote, and I'll tell you my favorite. I know that Brock says this on his drive-in every morning. My life is basically a big chunk of greatness. It was like the all-time classic Earl Thomas quote. To me, though,
me and Jim Moore, every day before we walk in the building, great. My life is great. My life is built on greatness.
To me, this situation seems sort of untenable at this point, you know, especially after the Instagram post yesterday, you know, the pay me or trade me sort of demands.
Everything I touch is going to be gold.
We've seen it now already with, like, Richard Sherman was released and Michael Bennett was traded and this defense that was so great for so long is being dismantled. You know, I think the reason Earl's still here is because he's the best player of all those guys, you know, the best at this point in his career. I think he's still a major difference maker and one of the best safeties in the league. And I think that for that reason, it makes them hard to trade him without what they want, which was essentially, you know, two first-round picks. And so, you know, to me, it seems like it's going to be a tense training camp.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't surprise me at all if he's not here by the start of the season.
You know, I was feeling myself
a
little bit.
Box, and they don't even know what they're getting themselves into.
Yeah. The beauty of radio is there's
it's not tough. I look good in it, so I'm good.
You do. The shared commonality between us on radio and you in print is much like you'll go back to your transcripts and you'll find them, especially if you're challenged and someone's like, dude, why'd you do that to me? And you're like, you said it. Here it is. The beauty of radio is stuff lives on forever. Like, we have it. We still go back to things. In fact, there's a few coaches I want to have on my radio show, and you know what they say to me? No. I'm not only going to say no, I'm going to say no because I know if I say something, it could be played for years and years afterwards. I preface this question with all of that, Greg, because what you say to this will be used in 8 or 9 days. Is Earl Thomas going to show? Bob Stelton yesterday, Bob Gross and Tom. Bob has the belief that Earl's going to be a no-show. Others in this building have a belief that if he shows, he's going to have a phantom hammy, a calf that could be barking, something that just inhibits him from getting on the field. Others think he's going to come in and be the good soldier. He's not going to risk hundreds or thousands of dollars in fines. If you had to guess right now which door, knowing Earl the way you do, the situation you call untenable, what route does Earl take in 8 days knowing this sound will be used against you once we start training camp?
I fall squarely into the middle camp, and I just want to be clear. I have no inside information on what Earl's planning to do. But my understanding is that he's planning to show up. And so I believe that, you know, I could see a scenario where he's here but not here. You know, here but not practicing, here but injured. And to me, that's the most likely thing because then it puts the onus on the team to either do what he said, essentially, trade him or pay him.
And pay him is what they're set to do, right? I mean, they're set to pay him $8.5 million, but that's not what he wants. He wants a whole lot more than that.
Well, if he went to the Rams, he'd probably get an extension before Aaron Donald, so we can throw that out there.
We talked about Michael Bennett a little bit in Blue 42. If there was any fallout from your commentary the last time you were on this show, you talked about having a chance to see Michael, what, just a couple weeks ago at his book signing? You feel a re-energized Michael Bennett? You feel a Michael Bennett that understands that these are going to be maybe the last snaps in his NFL career in Philly? Or do you see a guy that's going to, you know, continue to do this thing and actually may find an environment there with some real like-minded souls in Philly that see things in some of the alignment that he sees things?
Yeah, I spent a couple of days with Mr. Bennett when he was back in town. I went to the Women's Empowerment Day that him and his wife put on at Garfield, and then we went to the book signing where he was interviewed by Art Thiel. I basically got sort of the sense that he's not going to play, you know, forever. I don't think the length of his career is that much longer. I mean, he acknowledged many times how physical and difficult it can be just to train to get ready for a football season. But I did sense that he was re-energized about going to Philadelphia. Not only do they have a good defense, but they have some great young pass rushers. You put him next to Fletcher Cox with Brandon, you know, Graham on the outside. I mean, it's hard to see how like that's not scary for opposing offenses.
Yeah.
And you may reduce the snap count. Say he gets the same production in half the snaps. I mean, that's ideal for a player that's getting older and looking at the end.
Over-under number for sacks in Michael Bennett in 2018.
I would put it at 8. Yeah. You know, I think right around
there. Were you just looking at my note?
Yeah.
I just wrote 8 down before you even said that right there. Yeah. I think my number for Michael Bennett's 8. I think that is a very fair and reasonable number. And at $2 million, that's going to be some pretty good value to the Philadelphia Eagles. Terrell Owens is going to play in the Canadian Football League.
I mean, I think it's possible. Seeing him run that 40, the question is, what team really wants the attention so badly that they're willing to put up with everything that accompanies it?
He's letting you follow him around. Is this true?
I am going to Tennessee to hang out with him for his Hall of Fame induction. And on the docket are community events, mentoring University of Tennessee Chattanooga athletes, two parties that he's hosting, not one but two, Friday and Saturday night, and some sort of VIP breakfast that they're going to let me sneak into. Definitely anticipating some craziness there. And not quite sure really what to expect.
Have you ever been around him?
No, this will be the first time.
So you've never featured him?
You know where I was? I was in Philadelphia when he did the That's My Quarterback thing. I was covering that game, and I was 5 feet away when that happened. But I've never personally had an interaction with him.
Do you have any? Do you try to? I chatted with a friend of mine, Joe Tessitore. I don't think any of this is secret knowledge. And Joe Tessitore is going to be the new voice of Monday Night Football. And what a stud and what a great guy and a good friend to me. And I remember talking to him after the process of figuring out who was going to be in their booth. That when he got the nod and he knew that it would be his opportunity, that he just, and this is the way Joe is anyway. He's a boxing guy, by the way. I don't know if you ever spent time around Tess. You would love him because he loves telling stories. But he was very involved in the process of who was going to surround him in the booth. And he said, Brock, if we said it once, we said it 1,000 times. I want no bias. You try to flush any history of anybody, any of the work they've done, other places, college, anything. And it was solely about the relationship we would have in the booth and on the field. Can you go into this TO interaction and just flush everything? Do you attempt to do that? Or do you want to naturally go in with some of your history and bias?
Well, I think I try to remove as much of that as possible because if you don't, you're sort of shaping the story before you really go and experience it. You know, I want to see what he's like. I want to hear what he says before I sort of say, this is the same T.O., even though it seems like this is the same T.O. You know, people always ask me how I could write so much about Floyd Mayweather, given his domestic violence history. And to me, they just sort of separate out all these things. I write about that part of it, but I write about the boxing part of it. And to me, what I'm most interested in T.O. is, like, where's he at this point in his life? Why does he feel the need to still stand and clamor for attention when he's getting the greatest honor that can be given to any football player on earth? And does this tie into the T.O. that we knew so well, the reasons that he wasn't in the Hall of Fame in the first place?
Do you think it's possible he may be the most narcissistic athlete in the history of his generation of players?
He's got to be top five, right? You know, get your popcorn ready, you know, all these various things. And I wonder if some of this now is for him sort of trying to rehab that image. And if he is doing that, how effective is his methodology? I think this fits into, like, his general life arc. But I don't want that to be the story if it's not.
Hey, by the way, I'll answer that, Earl, one, too. I know I'm firing a ton of things your way, and I love hearing the intel and the stories behind it. Our most intriguing Seahawk is going to be coming up at 9:30, and of course, it's a guy that Greg is featured because it's a perfect day for Greg to be in for Salk here on Brock and Salk. I am like you. I think Earl's going to show. I think Earl's going to show, but I think he's going to be largely T-O-N-O-G-O. That it's just, he's just not going to abide by the rules and try to, as much as he can, make it as challenging an environment so he can get his way as headstrong as he's always been. Okay, three last quick stories here as we spin around the NFL. You're telling me that Ryan Shazier still wants to play the game of football?
Not only does he want to play, I think he thinks it's destined that he'll come back. You know, I think I was the last person that met with Ryan Shazier. We had breakfast and watched film 3 days before that Cincinnati game, and I was working on a story on the Steelers defense. And I was struck just by, like, how much he loved football. And I think since his injury, which we saw, and it's the kind of thing where you watch it and you wonder if you should watch football at all, I think he doesn't see it that way. I think he sees this as, like, a story that will have a movie tale kind of ending. He's a very religious guy. I think he believes that God has destined him to come back to the NFL. And I think most people that watch that injury and that like football players,
yeah,
are going to hope that he becomes
never
a scout,
again.
Yeah,
yeah,
or just something.
I'll
else
raise my
life.
Hand. Yeah, yeah. I hope he never plays again. And I don't want to diminish his dream. I don't want any of that. And I would never tell him. Maybe I shouldn't be a hypocrite. Well, I would probably say that to his face, you know. And I bet he would say, "Well, great, get in line with the other, you know, 100 million people that feel the same way as you do." But I feel destined to do this thing, and I guess go after it. You're right. You just said something there that I hadn't thought about until the moment you just said it. That may be the most devastating football hit I've seen. I wasn't around for some of the awful ones in the 70s and the 80s. And, you know, Mike Utley saw that broken neck. You see some of those. But just the sheer force that Ryan hit with, and to see him then go to his back and then to see all of the reaction after, that's a hard watch.
Yeah, like Vince Williams, one of the other linebackers, they were saying that he couldn't call a play the rest of the game because he stepped in for Shazier without crying. And these guys are trained to, like, look at an injury and move forward. You know, it's next man up is this thing we hear all the time.
Yep.
And this guy is playing the game and he can't stop crying because it was so brutal to watch the way that that unfolded.
I guess Kerry Carter, Curtis Williams, the late Curtis Williams and rest of soul, was probably another one when he came up to hit the Stanford running back. And we have seen some of those moments, and they are devastating. There is just simply no question about that. Okay, last one. This is the one that Kyle was most interested in. Ozzie Newsome getting one more dance. You may get a chance to cover some of it.
Yeah, trying to do a story where I spend kind of part of the season with him, kind of going through that last year. And to me, what's interesting about his story is like how many guys in the NFL, especially in general manager roles, where they're criticized for what they have for breakfast, get to go out on their own terms. You know, Ozzie won a Super Bowl. He built that team into a perennial playoff contender. There have been many quibbles with his tenure, and now he's got a decision to make at quarterback. But I think it's really interesting that a guy's able to go out on his own terms the way he is. And to me, I'm really interested in exploring how that happened and what he hopes to get out of this year.
Does he have any of those back to your Jerry DePoto story from an hour ago? Do you think Ozzie shares some of that same just process? I knew a scout for the Ravens, and I love talking to scouts when I'm out on the road, especially during games or halftime of games, before games or on the field of my college football games. I always find a way to try to get a pulse of some of the scouts. And I just remember one scout in Baltimore so vividly, and they all wear their stuff, by the way. It's kind of funny when you see them. They all wear their polos. They're very identifiable. That, hey, I'm a scout, and I'm here doing my thing for this organization. That the Ravens had, maybe arguably over the last 20 years, like with the Patriots, was the Raven way. Like, you just knew. Like, and I could watch tape and say, yeah, that's a Baltimore Raven. There's no doubt that that's going to be an Ozzie Newsome. That's going to be a Baltimore Raven guy. That he had just such a conviction about who he was and what the culture in their place was.
Yeah, I agree with that. The Ravens for years have played with a certain ethos, right? They are a tough team.
Yes.
And they are going to play great defense, and they are going to hit you hard, and they are going to run the football. And I think that's a reason why they're always, you know, sniffing around the playoffs, why they're often deep into the playoffs. You know, they're a couple of really good Patriot teams away from having won more than one Super Bowl, and I think that speaks to the kind of guys that Ozzie brought in, the talent he collected, and the tenure that he had.
This hour of Brock and Salk, this 9 a.m. hour every day, brought to you by Tackle.com, T-A-K-L, T-A-K-L's. We're tackling some of the topics in the NFL and around the NFL. Hey, lastly, just kind of off the cuff here, Carson Wentz, Deshaun Watson. I know you spent some time around Deshaun. Who in 2018 bounces back? Is it Deshaun Watson bouncing back, already taking some work? Carson Wentz, pushed by Nick Foles, getting married last week, finding a way, you know, to get want to get back on the field with the defending Super Bowl champs. If you were to hedge your bet right now between those two, knowing a little bit what you know around them, who do you think pops and reemerges in 2018?
That is a fascinating question with many different facets to it. I think Deshaun Watson had a less serious injury. You know, the way it has been described to me, because I'm working on a piece on him, is that it was a clean tear, and if such things can be good tears, his was a good tear. We also know that he's come back from that kind of thing before and won a national championship in college football and played in two. I think Carson Wentz, though, would probably be my pick just because, you know, I think he had a better season last year, but not by a ton. And I think that he's surrounded by a really good team.
Yeah.
Texans should be a playoff contender too, but I'm not sure that they're at the Eagles level. And I think that Carson Wentz was the league MVP when he went down last year.
Speaking of a comeback story, that's exactly who our most intriguing Seahawk is. We're counting it down. We're coming down into the single digits. In fact, our seventh most intriguing Seahawk. I may have to eat my words from yesterday. I said Delano Hill is a guy that has to be great this year. I may have to eat my words because I think this guy does as well. And if he does so, it'll be one heck of a comeback story. We'll dig into that. Seventh most intriguing Seahawk. Greg Bishop will as well. Before we answer your questions to round out this show, Greg Bishop's been in for Salky all day long. It's Brock and Salk on 710 ESPN Seattle.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
this is Brock and Salk.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com.
Come down the home stretch. Answer question, jerk. Just 15 minutes away. Greg did say he's been a part of that a couple times. Ooh, that jerk thing's coming up. I like that. So you got text questions into 710-710. But at 9:30 every day as we lead into the Seahawks training camp, we profile one of the most intriguing players. Greg, you asked me during the break, what makes it intriguing? Well, what made it intriguing was the awesome list that Salk put together from 12 on down to 1. And it's all encompassing. It's not just one aspect of it. It's play on the field. It's off the field. It's their past. I said this guy would be, you know, the most intriguing, maybe one of the biggest comeback stories in the NFL. But here we go as we count down from number 12 on our list.
Number 7.
Seahawks defensive end, Deion Jordan. You just said to me you think he may be the most intriguing player or one of them in all the NFL.
Yeah, 100%. And that was why I asked you that question, because when I saw him at 7, I was like, who are the other six? You know, I spent some time with Deion Jordan at the end of last season. He'd never really fully told his entire story, the struggles with drugs and alcohol, the way he was doing that to mask what was a pretty difficult childhood that he had, the way that South Beach was really difficult for him in terms of living up to being the number 3 pick in the draft and a guy drafted based on potential. And what I loved about the story is his agent, you know, basically got him into a room with his trainer, Tariq Azeem, you know, the same guy that trains Lynch and Marcus Peters and a bunch of those, you know, guys that are with Doug, and, you know, essentially saved Deion Jordan's life. And here he was coming back, playing in Arizona, the place where he had grown up after all these struggles and these long suspensions and the time away, and he gets a sack in that game. He sticks for the rest of the season. And they made big plans with him this offseason. They kept him around. You know, they see a real role for him. And for me, we just don't see that. When a guy gets suspended by the league for a year, it's really rare that they're able to come back, even rarer that they're able to excel. And to be able to do that on top of, you know, overcoming, you know, his struggles with drugs and alcohol and working with this trainer who was once the chairman of the Afghan Women's Boxing Federation. I mean, it's almost like a movie if it continues.
Yeah, you're right, Greg. Maybe aside from Shaquem Griffin, who's trying to do something unprecedented, as far as a narrative, your story arc, this is one that has it all. And Deion Jordan, well, like, you're proud of him in what he's done. He's also proud of his personal growth, and he should be.
I feel pleased, man. I'm happy. Mom happy, you know, so I'm really happy, but, you know, it's a continuous process for me, you know, just with everything on and off the field. It's a continuous process. You know, I plan on playing this game for much longer, you know, so I got to make sure, you know, I continuously grow as a football player and as a young man, too.
From a football, purely football perspective, as you were referencing the Eagles in our last segment, if you're out there with me at OTAs and minicamp watching the Seahawks and we're just talking ball, I'd say to you, Greg, right now as we watch this, the worst aspect of the Seahawks, or the most challenged, is their pass rush. Clark was doing his thing. He's taking a page out of Marshawn and the rest of their book, practicing when he wants to, trying to get his new money. Deion Jordan was out again with some injury, and I'll get to that in a second, and some knee surgery and trying to get back. And you watch, and this is nothing against Brandon Jackson and Quentin Jefferson, but they're not elite. And you have to be elite pass rushers in this game, and especially in this Seahawks defense. You have to be an elite pass rusher if you are a 3-deep, single safety team. They've got to have it. Thus, they've got to have Deion. They've got to have Frank Clark. And Coach Carroll knows it. I mean, the pieces that they've drafted, Michael Bennett, Cliff Averill having to retire, Malik McDowell, unfortunately, never been a part of it. You need Deion Jordan to step up.
He's an exciting prospect for us, really exciting prospect. Where we lost a guy, you know, from the draft, you know, maybe we can, you know, it's not exactly the same spot, but maybe we can be fortunate enough to make it up with you know, what he can do.
You've been around a lot of freaky athletes physically. There's not many more gifted physically in your presence doing what they're doing than Deion Jordan.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is a guy that went 3rd overall in the draft, having played in a sort of rotational system at Oregon. He didn't have a lot of stats. His sacks came often from just a couple games when he had big games. And yet he was taken by the Dolphins so high because they believed in his potential. I don't think because of his age that there's any reason to think he doesn't still have that kind of potential in him and that the Seahawks aren't capable of unlocking it. I'd worry more about, like, they are going to need to rely on him this year, and they can bookend him and Clark on that line. But when you don't have a Cliff Averill coming off the edge, when you don't have a Michael Bennett coming up the middle, when you don't have a Cam Chancellor allowing them more time to rush the passer, or a Richard Sherman, you know, locking down a receiver so that quarterbacks have to hold the ball longer. I mean, pass rush works in tandem with defensive backfield play, and I think the losses in the defensive backfield are going to make it that much harder to overcome.
Yeah, that much more important for him to get it done. And I'll spit a little, like, I'll go a little Groz on you here, maybe a mix of some Jim Moore. Heck, throw in C. Raj as well with the fresh water out there in Puget Sound and say something that is just off the cuff, but I'll say it definitively. His sacks per snaps were as good as anybody in the league. Mid-60 snaps, and he had four of these babies last year.
At the 48-yard line of Arizona, under center, Stanton takes the snap. In trouble, goes down in the backfield. Getting there is Deion Jordan. He just pushed his man all the way back into the backfield, reached out with one arm, gave a swat, and knocked Stanton off his feet. Welcome to the organization, Mr. Jordan.
Four of those, 65 snaps. I mean, that is remarkable. You play that out in a snap per sack, that's not going to happen in 2018. And actually, that number is both good and bad. The reason there was only 65 snaps is he continued to battle injury. He continued to find himself on the field. And Deion knows that if he's going to be that duo in that tandem with Frank and make this defense better, my goodness, he's got to stay healthy.
I have to work on my body, you know, because coming off of the knee injury, like it's tough, you know, to balance out the rehab and practice at the same time, you know. So it's a lot of work, man. Flexibility and, you know, strength. Those are things that I'm gonna work on.
And we've seen it's been hard, even for veterans. When Earl Thomas missed an offseason, it took him some time to get his legs back underneath him. Anybody that's been injured for an offseason, Tyler Lockett said he played all last year at 75%. When you miss an offseason and you're rehabbing and you're working out and you're not getting your legs underneath you, it's been very difficult to just hit the ground running from snap number one. That's really been Deion's whole career. But it was even this offseason, coming off four sacks. Where is he? Why another surgery? I want to clean it up. And, you know, can he actually be reliable, dependable, and available for 16 games? If he is, he'll have double-digit sacks.
To me, that's a huge question. And I think the other thing to note there is the Seahawks have found guys, you know, in many different places, whether it was drafting a Cam Chancellor late, you know, getting Richard Sherman in the fifth round, trading for Michael Bennett, you know, before he was Michael Bennett. I think that you could find a guy like Deion Jordan who has the skill set of Deion Jordan the way that they have. And mm-hmm. To me, there is a best-case scenario that involves him in the 10 to 12 sack range, playing for a team that may be a little better than people think.
And there's a scenario that he's in the 2 to 5 sack range because he misses half the season, and that knee that's been problematic, unfortunately, just flares up. But, man, for this team, it's got to be much more of the former than the latter because they desperately need that pass rush. That's Deion Jordan, our seventh most intriguing Seahawk. We've counted down from number 12. That means, holy smokes, we're only six shows away, about 1 week away. A week from tomorrow, we will be out there at the Seahawk facility as they kick off. Their rookies will come in early next week. I was over there yesterday, and thank you to the Seahawks. Eric Kennedy in particular, he has been in charge of that equipment room for decades, was there when I was there decades and decades ago. Just one of the most generous, good guys in the business. You talk about all these Mariner people behind the scenes. Well, the Seahawks are flooded with him as well. Mike Flood and Sandy Gregory and Eric Kennedy and so many of them behind the scenes that make it go. And Eric contributing for our camp today. I will try to have my voice in order tomorrow. I'm going to do the best I can to not scream and yell and bring out all the Coach Heward
in
me.
Prediction.
What's the prediction?
You don't have a voice tomorrow.
Well, I'm going to do.
I don't blame you because you give it up for the kids.
I'm going to do my very best, but that facility was already buzzing yesterday. You could see the equipment guys and the trainers, and everybody knows what's coming. Man, that juice is starting to come back to that facility.
Yeah.
Yeah, some of that Nelly Cruz juice is coming, and we are just a week away from NFL training camp. See, the Mariners will get back at it here on Friday at home. Anybody, did we find a winner to the question about where Scott and Jerry, you know, sipped their wine 20 years ago?
Yeah, John and Bothell.
John and Bothell won those two tickets.
Unfortunately, the actual first caller guessed Phoenix.
Sorry. Very close to Tucson. But been an absolute blast with Greg Bishop in for Salk all morning long. He wants to wrap it up with that segment you guys do, that jerk thing that's always been fun. So text your questions in to 710-710. We will do that before we hand it over to the professor. Greg Bishop in for Salk. It's Brock and Salk on 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is Brock and Salk. Answer the question, jerk.
Keep asking questions. Come on, I'll answer them. Come on, I'm here. I'm going to answer your questions, dang it.
Answer my question! The question, jerk!
Well, don't just stand there. Answer the question, jerk!
Which we do to wrap up every single show. Greg Bishop, Sports Illustrated. Thank you. That's the longest sports radio show you've ever done?
Yeah. And I've been called a jerk many times this week.
Have you?
So, yeah.
Death threats. You got a death threat?
Be careful when you write about Manny Pacquiao. That's the lesson there.
Sheesh. But you're going to be on the right end of that when it's said and done. He shouldn't be fighting anymore.
Should retire.
He should retire. Yeah, Greg wrote that. And the folks in the Philippines are not too happy with him. You happy with him? 710-710, you happy with him? You got a question or two for him? I think we still have room for a question or two. You can text in to 710-710. You got one there, Kyle?
Jerks, what is the most underrated thing you put guacamole on? So not just like a standard tortilla chip.
Yeah. Well, you know what I've been doing this...
Brock eats guacamole every day.
Yeah.
Is it full-on guacamole or is it just avocado?
So what I do, Lydia, what I've done, I found this little secret. Maybe it's my own little recipe. Cut the guacamole in half, spit out the pit.
It's avocado.
Take the avocado, cut it in half, spit out the pit. So you got the natural crevice
perfect,
in there.
Yeah,
like Crater Lake on both sides. And I fill that with sriracha. Or I fill it with green salsa. Especially from Wenatchee, the Royal Produce over there in Wenatchee. Unbelievable. So I filled it this week with some green salsa, and it just kind of, it's go time.
Get
but I need healthy fat for my brain.
One time, Greg, Brock walked into the sports bit with just half an avocado and a spoon stuck in it and said, who would
anybody interested?
Anybody interested? And tried to shop it around
no takers.
Bit, to which, yes, he had no takers because that's a very weird thing. But he just totally incensed that nobody wanted to eat this random half-eaten avocado that he brought.
So guacamole and something weird or underrated, not necessarily, but just pure avocado with salsa or with sriracha, try it. It'll change your life.
So you're one of like seven people on earth that would actually eat and enjoy avocado ice cream.
Oh, for sure. I did. I had avocado milk smoothie thing and at the bubble tea place it was an avocado smoothie
with
some of like their sweet milk, and I don't know what gave me the runs down in Cali. I think it was the water I drank out of the fan. I don't think it was that, but I very much enjoyed it.
I think we made it to ban you from the sports media landscape on diet alone.
Really? You don't like avocado or guac?
I mean, I eat it, but that's just because the wife throws it in front of me. Okay.
Guacamole is really good. I think underrated on sandwiches.
I totally agree.
Grilled,
put it on sandwich.
Grilled like a turkey bacon sandwich.
Put it
with
on
guacamole.
Eggs.
Very
put
good.
It on burgers. Could put it just about on anything. Just ask any millennial today. They love it too.
Ceviche too.
There you go.
Next question.
Jerks, in honor of National Hot Dog Day, what's the best dog you've ever had?
You know, I wrote a story once on this guy, Eric the Red Denmark, who was a competitive eater based in Seattle.
Yeah.
And I went to
He's
a Mets
still doing
game.
It, right?
Yeah, he just did it. Nathan's again. Great guy. I went to a Mets game with him and like Badlands Booker and all these competitive eaters, and they bought me a Nathan's dog at the Mets game. It's a moment I will not soon forget.
And it was good?
Yeah. I mean, I'm a sports writer. I like hot dogs.
Is there anything honestly better than the $1.50 hot dog and pop at Costco? As far as hot dogs go, anything better?
Absolutely not.
And it's in their little like steamer, so the bread is kind of. So I bought the Costco. You can now buy their hot dogs, the big long ones, half pound or whatever they are. And I actually cooked them up yesterday. Macy and Haley had some friends over for lunch, and I cooked those up and I put them on a bun. And I said, "Well, what do you guys think? Similar?" And they're like, "Oh, it's really good, but it's not like the Costco one because the Costco one is wrapped in foil and it sits in that little steamer, so the bread adheres to the hot dog just perfectly. And when you pay $1.50 for it and you get a soda drink with it, there's just nothing better than that."
I mean,
and they've never gone up in price,
never.
Like, despite inflation. $1.50.
Now, there's a reason that Costco is changing its menu. I just read about this the other day, and they will never touch the hot dog soda combo because they would have a riot on their hands.
Can't imagine.
Next question.
Greg, you've referenced a lot of the personally difficult stories you've written, like the Holinskis and the Humboldt hockey team. What is your favorite feel-good story?
Oh, wow. That's, yeah, we write a lot of those, too. You know, to me, some of the ones we've talked about today would really fall under that category. To me, Deion Jordan and his comeback was a great feel-good story. To me, the Steelers playing for Ryan Shazier after his injury was a real good feel-good story. And I hope even with a story like the Holinsky piece, that's a really tough one to read and shows sort of just the depths of this family's grief and anguish, that, you know, you still take some sort of feel-goodness out of the fact of what they're doing, the work they're trying to do with their foundation, Holinsky's Hope. And, you know, I think we should probably tell more of those stories, too, to be honest.
What do you think about the whole Level Up story today? The fact that Sierra releases her Level Up single last night, kind of a big deal. I was still up, like,
Level Up.
Level up. And then it turns out the boy Howdy songwriter.
Level up.
He'd actually written that up in Canada with his children's songs years ago.
I think the feel goodness to that story is the fact that two different people can write a song that basically just includes the words level and up.
Well, in the yummy in your tummy.
Yeah.
Yummy.
I mean, that is wordsmithing if you've ever.
I mean, we didn't get to the yummy in my tummy. Next.
All this so yummy. You know you want this yummy all in your tummy.
That was Howdy. Sierra says a little faster. That's kind of the main kicker.
Next question.
Oh, okay, never mind. Next.
Jerks. Does Edwin Diaz owe Gene Segura a car or truck?
Down the road, quite possibly, yes. When he gets his big deal, yes.
I think relative to salary, you have to get it for him, but you don't have to do it right away.
You don't have the money now.
He's in line for a big deal. Baseball players make a ton of money. There's a reason you don't see many of them anywhere except the gym and retire.
Bregman won the car and then said, I'm going to give it to my mom. Mm-hmm. And then I think you overheard his mom say she was going to then re-gift it to her daughter.
Yeah.
So, like, that car was just getting...
Already handed down a couple times. Is Diaz going to have to do that eventually, probably? Will they have some fun with that over the weeks and months ahead? I sure hope so, because that means this team is winning and having some of the fun-loving nature that I think they're just built into. You know, it's just baked right into whether it's the process, Greg, that you talked about such an awesome way. If you missed that 8 a.m. hour, good 20 minutes there, about the story Greg wrote on the Mariners. It'll come out in Sports Illustrated next week. This timing could not have been better. The break for these Mariners, timing could not have been better, and hopefully the fun-loving stuff will come right on back when they start playing Friday.
Next question.
Jerks, what is the best phone number you have in your phone?
So this one's a quick aside here, but I used to have Sir Mix-a-Lot's number, and... You know, when I called him for the story that I was working on, it was really hard to figure out what to call him. Do you call him Sir? Do you say Mix? Does that sound like a little bit too tongue-in-cheek? And so then I'm reading in the Seattle Times this story, and it's basically about how Sir Mix-a-Lot got a new number, and the guy that got stuck with his old one was getting all these crazy calls at all hours of the night, and no one would stop, like, blowing up the phone.
Wow.
So then I realized I don't actually have Sir Mix-a-Lot's number anymore.
We should call that guy, though.
We should do it right now.
We should.
Get in trouble for stuff like that. That's a good question. Favorite number?
We think you have Peyton Manning.
Yeah.
But you have it under like a code name.
That's a code name.
Because we went looking for it one time behind your back and couldn't find it.
Yeah. And some of them got codes. Some of them got numbers. That phone gets lost. There's some danger there. Danger.
You got like any coaches?
Yeah, Lane Kiffin. There you go. Lane's a good one. Lane's a beauty. That was fun, man. Appreciate you coming in.
Thank you, Greg.
Thank you for having me. It was like writing without an editor.
And you just got a note from your editor. You got a little work to do today.
I got to call him right now, unfortunately.
Right. Okay, get a little work done. But for this day, Mr. Bishop, the hay is in the barn. See ya.
See ya. Oh, yeah!